is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, Tuesday edition of the program. Coming up today, we've got the Professor John Clayton at 4 o'clock talking football with us. El Hombre, Michael Bradley at 4:30, which is how that'll go during football season since we have the player spotlight every day at 5 o'clock. Unfortunately, you get a shorter segment of El Hombre in football season. So 4:30, and then our player spotlight today will feature Jacob Hollister, a man who knows how to take a punch. He's as tough as they come, that guy.
What is it about him that, and I didn't want to lay it on too thick because it doesn't make it sound great when you go, dude, you just get punished every time. And I commented on last year, and then the first game, what game was it? I think it was Atlanta. He just got like a high-low tackle once again, and Rabel looked at me and just started laughing. Because, and again, I remember looking at him after the Monday night game last year, and he got punished in that game, and he was walking into the locker room through the hallways, and it was like just his clothes on his body were hurting him. He was just barely walking along, and I'm like, he's a tough guy, man. I mean, I think that's the positive.
Do they teach you how to, in boxing, they'll teach you how to roll with a punch, and, you know, get the shoulder up and roll with the punch, take steam out of it. You'll do different things to minimize the impact of a punch. Do they teach these guys anything like that in terms of receivers or running backs or any of these guys?
I'm not sure. That'd be a good question for, like, Bumpus. I don't think I ever heard that. Certainly as a defensive player, you don't hear that. But, you know, I hear, like, Will Dissly is a big proponent, and so is Pete and his wife, Glenna. They're big proponents of playing other sports, you know, and a lot of different, you know, whether it's soccer and basketball or, you know, karate or whatever. I mean, you know, it's those kinds of things are they kind of help you. Like you see some people that I remember when I was at Stanford, I used to see some of the most ridiculous bike wrecks ever. And it was just people that I don't know. I just they were just nerdly and had never played sports or something. And
nerdly.
Yeah. And just I'd be like, how did you two run into each other like that? You know, and I just, you know, getting out there and playing all kinds of different sports, just going out and playing, you know. Yeah.
Isn't this the same guy that separated his shoulder in a bike crash?
Yeah. It was wet. It was
they
wet
were,
that day.
Okay. They were challenging conditions, Jim.
Well, look, I've never been risk averse. So I'm starting to get that way now. I think I told you guys during the coronavirus, I should have bought stock in Band-Aid because I kept cutting myself and I ripped my toenail off. And
you're taking spills on the treadmill.
Yeah, fell off the treadmill. Yeah.
I'm done getting on ladders.
Oh.
Ladders.
Yeah. Did you fall?
Done with ladders. When I was putting up Christmas lights last year, I fell off a step ladder, believe it or not. It was just two steps on the step ladder, and I went down so hard that I thought I knocked a tooth out. I went in and looked in the mirror, and it was okay. But
realized it was just a flipper that you had going there.
Yeah, no, it wasn't just the flipper. No, but it's I'm done with ladders. I was looking at my gutters the other day, and there's some weeds growing out of it, and I was like, man, I'd like to get that weed, but I don't want it so bad that I'm going to get up there on the roof.
Going to hire
Jim.
It's time for a professional.
I'll tell you what, man. I don't know if that must be an age thing, but I went to Home Depot and rented one of those extension ladders that goes like 24 feet. Mm-hmm. And I got about 3/4 of the way up that thing, and I was like, no way.
Oh, really?
No way. Yeah.
Was it just being up that high, or was it
shake? Well, and just your age. I mean, 15 years ago, I'd have been like, I'll climb up there and do it. No problem. You got to start thinking about those things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be some guy that plays 9 years in the NFL and has 20 surgeries and eats it off falling off a ladder. That's more than
You're not
anything.
Going out like that.
Not going down
right.
that
by,
way.
By the way, as I was riding home, Jim, yesterday, I saw something that would just send Dave into a tizzy, a man on a giant unicycle going down the road.
Was he in the bike lane or where was he?
He was on the sidewalk.
Is he a grown man?
Yes.
Was it during the work day?
Yeah, it was after we left. Oh. So 6
Yeah.
30-ish.
Shouldn't he be working instead of riding a unicycle?
All I could think of was Dave would just be outraged right now. And if I wasn't on my motorcycle, I would have taken a picture of him for you or a video. Yeah. You recorded him, but
don't you give him some credit, Dave? To get on a unicycle and balance the way you need to. I mean, that's better than being on a two wheeler.
One word answer: why?
We need to try it sometime.
No, we do not need
yes,
to try
we do.
It, Jim. And you should not be. If you're not getting on a ladder, you're not getting on a unicycle.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Is this on the show sheet?
No,
by the way?
It's not. Let's get down to business here. Now that we covered all of that. Pete Carroll was speaking with the media yesterday. We played that for you during the show. We didn't get a chance to respond to much of what he said, but he was talking about the offenses getting off to a great start, and he feels like because of the shortened offseason and lack of padded practices, it sets the defense back.
Well, I really think that overall, just the lack of time working out on the field and missed in the offseason and all of that, really seems to have affected the defense more so. I think also the lack of opportunity to play full speed football in camp, which is it's a real benefit as you're developing your game, and that being absent, there's a factor there, and so I think the offenses are taking advantage of it a little bit, and they've started faster.
So that feels a little counterintuitive to me because offenses are built on timing.
Right.
It's all about timing and rhythm, and defense not quite as much. You're reacting to what you're seeing. So the idea that it would set the defense back and it would be an advantage to the offense seems counterintuitive.
I agree. I was trying to wrap my head around this one because there's five teams last year that held their opponents under 300, and there's only two this year. But you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the argument, I guess I could put it this way, of who has an advantage on a slippery field, the offense or the defense?
I would think the offense because they know where they're going.
They know where they're going, and the defense has to react. But isn't
except for in the Apple Cup.
That's always the exception, of course. But
snow.
But, as a defender, you're used to reacting. That's what you do for a living. And I don't know, I guess I just feel like you're on the same surface. But, you could spin it, but it's always been the other way around. Yeah, like you said, the defenses are ahead because they just fly around, go make plays. They don't have to necessarily execute. There's all these different things. But then I guess you could make the argument where what he's making is that, the offense knows where they're going. They've been able to execute and, everything's drawn up. Whereas for a defensive, I always say there's three parts to a play. Number one, get lined up. Number two, execute your responsibility in the defense, and number three is just turn it loose and go play. And so, maybe it's not really as much that way, I guess, with the offense is what Pete's saying. But I don't know. I mean, I think you could
still seems counterintuitive.
But the thing is, we talked to Brian Billick and I brought up the injuries, and he's like, well, let's wait and see. And he was right, although there has been a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
So, but we'll just wait and see. And maybe this, it'll start to correct itself. But man, there's especially Jermaine here because of the ridiculous number of yards they're giving up.
Doesn't that seem counterintuitive, Jim, that an offense is built on rhythm and timing and defense is used to reacting to what they don't know is coming? You've got an idea. You think you know based on formations what's coming and things like that, but that's just the nature of being a defensive player, right? So they're not facing anything new. Whereas an offense, you figure, would take a step back without the preseason because, this play is built on timing. This guy's got to be here at this point. This guy's got to be here at this point. And so what Pete said didn't really ring true with me.
Well, at the very at the very end, Art Thiel asked a question, and Pete gave him a good answer. He thought through everything. But at the very end, Pete said, I don't know if that's really true or not, but he said it's my best guess or something like that. If you're the coach of the Seahawks and you've got the defense playing the way your defense is playing so far through three games, you'll kind of go, well, okay, we couldn't be this bad. It must be something else. And maybe that's it because we didn't have training camp and all these different things. So it couldn't be personnel or scheme related or coach related. It couldn't be that. So it has to be something else.
Lack of preseason seems fair. One thing we've seen in these three games is that they are not balanced. They are pass heavy, which makes a lot of people happy, right? The cooking people, as Jim calls them, very happy about that. But in two of the three, this last game and the first game, they were decidedly pass heavy, much more even in the Patriot game. Pete talking about that.
You know, in our case, you know, we have not balanced out run and pass as much as we kind of normally do. But it's because we've been so effective throwing the football, we've gone with it. And however, I think you're going to find in the long term of it that balanced football is really what is crucial to the success of this game. And in big time success and championship success, you know, you've got to be able to do everything that you, that's available to you to get through these games. You know, that so far the offenses have been quite out of balance in our games, you know, that we're opposing, and it's hard to win that way.
But don't yeah. don't you go with something that's working until somebody stops it or figures a way, right? The old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, the good news is that they used to have to go to the pass.
Yeah.
And now they don't really need to. So, because, you know, it's working and it's not a problem. You know, as far as, you know, defenses being ahead, maybe defenses need more live reps, you know, than we thought, because you're really not getting that. I mean, you had a few times where, you know, they had the mock game, they had one at the VMAC, and then they had two at CenturyLink, and maybe defenses just need more of that. I don't know. Or maybe the whole thing will turn around this week. Maybe we won't see as many injuries. Maybe we'll see more defensive type of games, but some guys are playing defense. Indianapolis and Pittsburgh sure are. So
yeah, boy, look at the Colts giving up. I thought that might be a typo or something. They're only giving up 225 yards a game.
Yeah. So that means the Seahawks are giving up 275 more yards per game almost. Oh, so,
yeah.
Wow. But, hey, yeah, I mean, that might be it.
You see this from the 360, lack of crowds helps offense. I think there's some truth to that, too, don't you? I mean, when you think about the 12s not being there or Kansas City, I mean, some of these home fields where the fans really get into it, I would think that would have a play in it.
Maybe, but, you know, I actually did a football one-on-one thing today, and it was about on the safety. And I don't know if you guys remember on that play, there was a wide receiver that went in motion, and then Bobby shifted him. And a lot of times when you're on defense, especially when you have a team buried on the one-yard line, there's going to be a loud crowd noise. And, you know, Bobby made a call, but a lot of times they'll have to go up and pat the guy on the rear end and, you know, get him to move over. As Tom Catlin used to say, those D linemen, they're just like cattle. Just slap them on the butt, they'll move. That's what he used to say. But, they, you know, you're able to communicate more freely on defense. You know, that's would be, you would think, one advantage. Because, you know, look, you're a home team, and the offense is, you know, you're out there, and it's pretty quiet typically. So, yeah, it's a hard one to explain. There's lots of strange things, but I guess it shouldn't be that surprising because, you know, we were talking about maybe going to three preseason games, two preseason games. You went to zero, and, you know, you didn't have any of the OTAs and all that time out on the field. I mean, you can talk about Zoom calls and all that stuff, and sure, that's if you've handled that well and had good meetings and everybody's paying attention, you know, there's a way to win that. But, you know, I still think that you need to get out there, and I really think preseason is important. I've always been a fan of it, and everybody wanting to decrease it. I'm like, why? I like the preseason. It's fun. It's watch. You know, younger guys get a chance to develop. I mean, we had 33 undrafted free agent rookies make teams this year. So it's like one per team. So it's hurt a lot of different things. So I guess, you know, maybe we shouldn't be surprised that but it's just so lopsided. And I think for, especially here in Seattle, that it's so much pass lopsided as far as the offense goes, just not used to seeing this. I mean, if you'd have told somebody in 2012 that Russ is going to be chucking it that many times and, you know, that he was going to have that completion percentage. Oh, you had to say it, Bob. You know what? I'm going to start referring to myself in the third person.
Oh, please don't do that. I won't say cooking
anymore. Dave doesn't want to hear cooking anymore. Bob
doesn't want to hear that anymore. It makes me very uncomfortable. Makes Bob very uncomfortable.
Well, it's crazy, though. He's on a pace for 74 touchdown passes and only 5 interceptions or something like that. And I think the record's 50, Patrick Mahomes in 2018. But, Dave, what'd you make of Pete's comments? Because when I heard him yesterday, I was thinking, man, this guy sounds like he's really reluctant to embrace the let Russ cook thing, and yet it's working, and so he's kind of going with it, And yet there's another part of him that the devil on his other shoulder is saying, hey, Pete, come on, man, get back to that run first philosophy, get back to that balance. And then Pete even threw in, I don't know if we have this cut or not, Bob, but talking about the weather. I mean, when you go on the road in December and if you're going to have to play in Green Bay and it's 8 below in the NFC Championship game, you want to have that running game going. And you know you have that in your back pocket with Carson and Hyde and the way the line's blocking this year. And they've always had the running game, but it just seemed like Pete was this, you know, reluctant guy just going, yeah, this is pretty cool what we're doing, but.
Yeah. Here, one more from Pete before Dave jumps in, just talking about no set formula to improve other than needing balance.
I don't think that there's any set formula other than believing in the game is most successfully played when you play with balance. And so we have to continue to pursue the running game to make sure that in the games when the wind's blowing and it's howling or whatever may be going on, you know, the football's soggy and all that. I don't think the football gets soggy, really. I don't know why I said that. But wet, you know, that we can run the football.
I don't know why I said that.
Well, here's what I'd say for Pete, and I've said this before. I mean, look, for the most part, coaches get up there, and they're supposed to come up with answers, mm-hmm. you know, and explain things. And some things can't really be explained. I mean, I just think a lot of this is – it's just an off year. It's an odd year, and so weird things are happening. Maybe it'll start to normalize. But I think, you know, as far as the running game going, I don't think it has anything to do with the cooking people or anything. I think Pete sees that it's not necessarily – I mean, you don't want to be negative about your quarterback, you're right? You don't want to go, yeah, I don't expect Russell to keep this up. I mean, he could never do that. That's ridiculous. I mean, at one point he was 83% coming into this game. I think he was, what, 70, 72? You know.
In this one, he took a big step back.
Yeah, huge. I mean, there's been like two or three quarterbacks, I think Drew Brees and Kirk Cousins, that have thrown for 70% for an entire year. And Russ was connecting at a ridiculous rate. And so, and then the thing I pointed out today is that on the football 101 thing is that, you know, if they had not had a fluky intercept or drop by Greg Olsen and a pick six and DK Metcalf, who, you know, both of those guys will never do those things again. I would bet on that Greg Olsen's not going to let a nicely thrown ball go through his hands. DK Metcalf's never going to not tuck his head down. They would have zero giveaways, zero.
Yeah.
And they'd be at plus six right now, turnover ratio. And it's just those two things that that happen. And it just I think he sees it as being not sustainable for the entire year. And that at some point it is going to get back to that. Because remember, you know, the top three running teams last year, four running teams, I mean, you're looking at Tennessee, you're looking at San Francisco, the Seahawks. I mean, they all made it into the playoffs. The Baltimore Ravens. I mean, running the football is still hugely important. And I think he sees that.
Yeah, it is, but boy, with that defense that you have this year, you need to really outscore people. And you're trying to outscore people every week anyway in the National Football League, but still, I would think even, you know, given your defense a break, you're reaching a point with watching the Seahawks defense that you want to see as little of them out there as possible, and so to run the ball more would give you that opportunity.
if nothing else, it just limits their exposure, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it might build their confidence a little bit, too.
Well, I got to say, on that last drive, you know, I was thinking, okay, how do we – was there like 4 minutes left? Because I think they scored with a little over two or somewhere around there. You know, I was thinking, how do you grind the clock down and get a score here? Because we just – you didn't want to put the defense back on the field the way it was going. Look, I'm not saying that the defense is hopeless or anything like that. There's lots of promise there, but –
You don't have faith at this point.
The way it was going, that's, you know,
well,
for sure.
It was almost like the clock beat Dallas more than the Seahawks did.
Kind of, yeah. And I think that feeling is warranted based on what we've seen through three games. Now, they may improve dramatically as the season goes, but all you can do is base your opinion on what's been put in front of you to this point, and what's been put in front of you has not been good. So if you go into that last drive going, man, I don't like this. I know that was you scored too early. I can relate to that. I mean, I think most people probably had that feeling like, oh, boy, here comes the defense. Please, just hang on. Just hang on. I mean, that's basically you're praying and hoping that they can just hang on to it, which we're not used to following the Seahawks team. Let's take two.
It's time to take two. Brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
Take two.
The Texans gave former Seahawks safety Earl Thomas a physical, but sent him home ahead of his scheduled workout without a deal. John McLean of the Houston Chronicle reports that after a lot of internal discussions, the Texans decided Earl Thomas wasn't a good fit.
That sounds weird to me. I'm curious to hear more about this. You figure they would have had those discussions prior to bringing him out, right? Hey, what do you guys think of Earl? Can he work in our system? Does he fit what we want to do? Should we bring him in? All right, let's bring him in and take a look at him. And then he gets a physical and they go, yeah, I don't think he's going to fit. Did something come up in the physical that sent them the wrong direction? Or did he say something? I mean, this just sounds weird to me that those discussions come prior to bringing the guy out, flying him out there and giving him a physical and then saying, don't even bother with the workout. We've decided you're not a fit.
Yeah, well, I don't anticipate that it's anything wrong with what happened during the physical. It just, you know, have they had Zoom calls with him? Have they talked to him? Is there something that maybe, you know, Earl, like you said, did he say something? You know, what was he like? I mean, Earl can be a wild card.
Yeah.
I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah,
I
mean, he can, yes, it is.
So, you know, if they had that kind of a discussion. Hey, look, we talked about this yesterday with Ryan Neal. I mean, a guy like that, you have an interview with that guy, you're fired up about him, you know? And I don't know where Earl Thomas's mindset is right now. I know he's a heck of a player.
You'd think he'd be on his best behavior, right, Jim? I mean, he's trying to find a job. You're talking about a guy who was looked at as a surefire Hall of Famer. Maybe not in the absolute prime of his career, but he's not finished. He's not cooked. It's not like he's a shell of what he used to be physically. And he can't find a job.
Well, yeah, because of what happened in Baltimore and other things in his past. And so you would think, maybe he's asking for too much money. Maybe he's lost more than half a step. I mean, there's a lot of different things, but I would think the Texans, when I heard that today, not a good fit. You guys are 0-3.
They didn't even work him out.
You need something. You need some sort of lift here, and you're not going to go with Earl Thomas? All right. I mean, maybe if they just said, hey, you know, he's asking for too much money or whatever, but I'm surprised that Earl Thomas hasn't found a job because he's still got ability, I would think, to play.
At least 9 members of the Titans organization have tested positive for COVID-19, 3 of whom were players. As of right now, they are not allowed back in their facility until at least Saturday. The Vikings, who faced the Titans Sunday, have not had any positive tests so far, but their facilities are closed today out of precaution. Diana Rossini reports that moving games to Monday or Tuesday is an option.
Yeah, you almost kind of forgot. I mean, outside of the fans not being there, and you know, we kind of joked about Andy Reid and his fogging up mask and things. For me, it was like it's football again. I kind of forgot about the virus, so to speak. I mean, again, outside of those obvious things, and then because nobody was testing positive, you weren't hearing anything. We weren't getting news about, you know, anything like this. So I read this today. It was like, oh man, yeah, that's right. They've been doing such a great job, and they still are. I mean, you're talking about nobody on the Vikings to this point has tested positive. 3 of the people there were players with the Titans. It'll be interesting to see how they handle this, if it's a Monday or Tuesday option, whatever happens there. But to this point, I was impressed, really impressed with the way the NFL's handled this.
Yeah, just 3. I mean, I heard outbreak. And
well, so 9 just total members players of the organization.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like Aaron Donald was saying, these guys are breathing on each other and leaning on each other and sweating on each other. And so, yeah, hopefully. I like that they're talking about, hey, let's be nimble on this so we can play on a Tuesday or a Monday or whatever. But again, I mean, this is another explanation to this is just a weird year. I mean, the fact that the stats are all askew right now and offenses are ahead of defenses, you know, this is part of it.
You got Minnesota at Houston and Pittsburgh. Let's see. No, wait a minute. You got the Steelers at the Titans, and those are the 2 games that are scheduled for 10 o'clock on Sunday. But, boy, everything thrown into a tizzy here with the COVID-19. And, we'll see how they handle it. But, yeah, I'm with you, Bob. I think the NFL's done a good job of handling it thus far. And this is the first blip that we've had. I really didn't think they'd get the season started on time and get all 16 games in, but now I'm starting to think that they will.
All right, coming up, the professor predicted a trap game in Miami yesterday, and that sparked a show debate about whether there is such a thing as a trap game. We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and More on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Tell you what, Jim, Dave has taken this mask thing seriously. He had it off during the break. We're sitting here talking, and as Matt gives us the heads up, all right, 10 seconds or whatever, he puts the mask on. I said, you don't need that for the segment, Dave. You're going
to
be fine.
I put the mask on, and then I forgot to turn the button on, Jim.
Oh, did you? All right. I'll have to turn on the stream to check you guys out here.
Yeah.
You still have Danny in the middle there?
He's on the floor. We could put it back up on the seat, though, if you want to watch Danny with Dave's artwork on the big head here. Right, there he goes, in the middle seat. 710sports.com. Click the watch live button. You can see us in all of our glory here. We've got the professor coming up at the top of the hour, but we had John on yesterday, and one of the things he said that caught my ear, and I think we've had this discussion before, but he pointed to Miami as a potential trap game. It's a trap game, which to me is implying you as a team, the Seahawks, are looking at this team going, let's worry about the Vikings after them. This is Miami. We don't have to try that hard. I think that is utter BS, complete nonsense. The fact that in the NFL you've only got 16 games and you spend an entire week preparing for that one opponent. That's all you talk about. That's all you watch on film. That's all you game plan for. And the idea that you show up and go, I'm not going to try as hard as I normally do. Or I feel like I can beat this team with my B-level game, or somehow there's going to be a letdown. I could buy it in a 162-game baseball season. I could buy it in an 82-game NBA or hockey season. I could even buy it in college football when you get the big schools that schedule the patsies, and then something like Michigan, Appalachian State happens, right? I can buy it in all those scenarios.
College kids.
Yeah, I don't buy it in the NFL.
Jim, I'll let you go next. Let the insanity begin.
Oh, wait, Dave, you don't want to pile on and say, yeah, you're right, Bob.
Let's sandwich it.
Okay. All right. Let me just point this out before we get into the particulars of a game in Miami. Let's say the Seahawks look at their schedule and they've got Kansas City 1 week. The next week they're playing the Jets. And the next week they're playing the Packers.
Okay.
You mean to tell me that they're still going to get up for that Jets game as much as they got up for Kansas City and Green Bay?
I think they don't even know who they're playing the next week, as Dave points out. We've asked these guys. They've got no idea what their schedule is. I think they prepare for every opponent the same way. And as Dave has said, by the end of the week, every opponent looks like a Super Bowl contender.
Okay. Well, you know, maybe we've got some mental coaches or whatever therapists that are listening today, and I think they would probably tend to agree with me, and it's something that they have to deal with their clients, where you need to get up for every game, and we understand all of that, but I think that's something that needs to be talked through. Anyway, I just know that there is such a thing as trap games.
Well, what do you think happens, though? In all seriousness, I mean,
it's a letdown spot.
But do you think they're overconfident, that they're in the locker room going, oh,
I don't think it's a conscious thing. I think Maura pointed that out today, and it's not conscious that they're doing it. But think about it. Okay, you just had two big games, right? New England, you were on Sunday Night Football, and you took it right down to the wire. And, man, it took all kinds of energy to get through that one. And then the next week, here comes America's team, Dallas Cowboys. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman's here, National Game of the Week, and you survive that one. And now you got to go 3,500 miles to Miami. And I've checked the weather report, too. I know Dave gets a kick out of it when I do this. But 86 degrees, 50% chance of rain, winds up to 20 miles an hour.
Ooh. Well, that may have more of an impact than the idea that they're going to mentally
let down.
It's a 10 o'clock
game. A 10 o'clock game, and I started thinking.
10 o'clock. Stop. Don't
okay.
go there.
Well,
don't
I'm
do
just
that.
Throwing all these different things in there as to why Miami might win this game. I don't think Miami's going to win their 6.5-point underdog, but don't be surprised if they do. Remember the game the Seahawks had in San Diego where they needed water and needed oxygen?
It was over 100 degrees out there. And
well, okay. Well, you've lived places like Miami, Bob, when it's 86. Might sound tolerable, but not with the humidity you get there.
Yeah,
so it's going to be a totally different thing for the Seahawks. And you're playing the Miami Dolphins. You know, you're not as excited about playing the Dolphins as you are these other games that they've had. And then they come back and play Minnesota. Now, Minnesota, no great shakes this year. In fact, they're winless. But still, it's a Sunday night game where, all the attention in the nation is going to be on you again.
Okay, I've heard enough.
Okay. Well, I was trying to take it to break so you wouldn't get a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, but I see. You're trying to filibustering me, aren't you? No. Yeah, I mean, look, has it been a long time since I played? Yes. Is the mentality a little bit different? Maybe. But we do check. I do check every once in a while. I ask guys, who do you guys play the next week? And a couple of times guys will say, yeah, I know it's Miami because my, you know, brother or my cousins right. or my friends have been texting me and, you know, that a couple of weeks from now. But for the most part, nobody really knows what's next. But like Bob just said, well, and especially now, like we sit here and look at stats. We've been, you know, watching other games. When I was in the NFL, I didn't watch football games. I mean, you don't want, that's the last thing you want to do. Like, I remember going out on Monday nights. We would have a good time on Monday nights because you just got out of film, you know, and everybody would usually go somewhere. Married guys could come by for an hour or two, and you'd have the Monday night game on somewhere. And then, you know, the single guys could stay out late, and the married guys went home, and then you had the day off the next day. But you go in on Wednesday, and you just start looking at film. You start looking at what they do. The coaches are like, this team, this is what they do really well, and go on and on. I was telling the story in the sports bit today. The only time I've ever seen where – this is the only time where I've seen a guy in the NFL that was truly a terrible player, and it was Tony Mandarich. And he was like the second pick of the draft or first pick of the draft, playing for the Green Bay Packers in Nesby, Glasgow, the late Nesby, Glasgow, unfortunately. He was there early, and he's like, hey, guys, you got to come see this guy. You got to come watch this. And I remember going in watching and how terrible he was. And he gave up like 6 sacks in a game. Mm. And, you know, but other than that, you're sitting there looking at the film. You're not looking at a record. You're not looking at where they're ranked. You're not looking at, you know, anything other than what they're doing, you know, and you're going, that guy's a baller. That guy's good. This guy's good. And by the end of the week, everybody, you feel like the closer you get, and I'm still that way. By the end of the week, the closer we get to a team, the more I'm like, man, I don't know. I mean, they've got to stop this guy, and they got to stop that guy. And if they don't do this, they may not win. So, you know, I just think in the NFL, the parity is, it's way too close between a win and a loss that any team can win. So, yeah, I don't think that's the mentality. Now, you're saying maybe it's something, you know, what? Subconscious, you know, that maybe that's human nature, whatever. I don't think, and coaches do a really good job of making you think that the next opponent is, you know, how Lou Holtz used to say, we can't beat these guys. It'd be little sisters of the poor or whatever. And we can't beat these guys. So yeah, it's, I just don't think that it never occurred to me. That's for sure. I don't ever remember a game where I played poorly and thinking, geez, I should have studied harder or I should have been more prepared.
No. Well, yeah, I know that about you, Dave, but I don't think everyone is.
But Jim,
like
I wasn't the greatest player in the NFL. Like everybody was.
Well, you weren't the only one that had that mentality. It wasn't just you.
No, I think there's probably some guys in the 92 Seahawks locker room that, you know, when did maybe. Well, not maybe.
Yeah, they were on offense.
Yeah. No, I just – okay, so you look at this game and just look at it from – okay, the Seahawks are favored by 6.5. Now, you would normally look at what the Seahawks have done, and they've got their high-flying offense, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. Boy, they're averaging 35 points a game. Russell Wilson throwing the ball all over the lot. They should beat Miami by 7 points and cover that spread. But, you know, why is it only 6.5?
I never knew what a spread was either.
No, I know.
I remember about my fourth or fifth year asking somebody, so what does that mean, the point spread? Yeah, what do you mean you get points? Like, at the end, you add points on? I had no idea what a point spread was.
Okay. I'm just let me just leave you.
Really, I didn't know about it until I started doing the show with Jim.
Jim, yeah. Jim's educated you on it.
Let me leave you with just one thing here. Okay, so you know how I told you 2020 is my year. And in the past,
yeah,
when
been
I had
great
the smoke,
so far.
Yeah,
in
the it's
past,
been fantastic.
In the past, when I had the smoke and lock, I didn't do very well. But this year, picking Seahawks games, I'm 3-0, and I'm 3-0 against the spread. And I'm telling you, this game this week is not going to go as easy as people think it will. That's all.
I don't know if anybody is thinking that, though. Their defense is last in the NFL. I mean, they're giving up truckloads of yards. They're going down to the wire to beat these teams. They're not blowing anybody out. So the
but
idea
they're beating
that,
good teams, and Miami's not a good team.
Well, they just won a game, and they're at home, and you've got to play on their field. So I don't think they take them lightly as much as you seem to think they might.
Okay. Well, we'll see. When we check in Monday at 3, we'll see how it goes.
All right. Should the Seahawks rest Carson rather than rush him back this week? And do you trust Trey Flowers if Dunbar is out again? We'll get into that conversation next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A reminder, you've got radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM. It becomes a radio right there for you. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us as he does. What was that?
The stream wasn't on during the break, right?
No, it's only when you turn your mic on.
Okay, good. I was pantomiming something. I had a coach in Denver that used to say, you got one thumb in your mouth and the other one in your butt and you're rotating.
Dave was demonstrating.
Yeah, and he would do that when he was way in the back and you screwed up on a coverage. He would do that.
Just give you the hand signal.
Yeah, and you knew that you messed up.
Now that was on the stream, what you just did. So people can check
that out. I
didn't
stand up, and you use your imagination.
710sports.com.
We were talking about those coaches that don't let you have a letdown.
Yeah.
They make it very important every week. Jim.
I can see you now, Dave.
Are you a unicycle rider? Is that what the problem is?
Dave, I'm waving at you. Can you wave to me?
Hi, Jim.
Yeah.
How are you?
All right.
You see me?
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Good.
There we go. He's waving at Jim, everybody. 710sports.com. Click watch live. Pete Carroll talking about whether Dunbar, who we don't know if he's going to play or not, but asked whether he was banged up in the Patriots game.
Yeah, he was. He came out of the game really sore, and we did a couple things with him and treated him and tried to get him back, and he couldn't quite make it. I can't tell you about this week. I haven't talked to him yet, but I can't tell you about this week. But he's got kind of an ongoing sore knee that we've got to work with, and from that developed at least out of last week, and so we got to see what's happening.
Kind of concerning when he uses the word ongoing.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, this is, look, I you know, San Francisco is still playing good defense, but you know, they've had their share of injuries, but you know, they're only giving up like 300 yards a game. So, you know, it's, but this is part of it. Dunbar is a really interesting player. I mean, he's very, what Pete described him as in the beginning of the year when we all had our big meeting with Pete, you know, the broadcast team, he said, he called him unusual. And I think what he meant from the standpoint of, and Moyer, you know, said this, and, you know, I previewed him and everything, that I thought he was better in zone than he was man-to-man. And I think Paul reflected that as well. He's really smart. He's a really smart football player. And I think that's where, from the standpoint of a diagnosis, diagnosing a play, you know, the flip play in Atlanta, you know, him reading that, which was, everybody's going one way and the running back's going the other, and he read it and shut it down. And then, you know, the same thing with the fly sweep. And then he had his hands on, what, 3 footballs now?
Yeah.
He's got an interception. He had one.
Almost had another one in that same game.
Right, and then he almost had one in the Atlanta game.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's very necessary. I love Trey. I still think Trey can do a good job. I think Trey's a really good football player. I'm not sure. He's not a better corner than Dunbar is, but he's a good football player. And he had a couple of things that, I mean, he made some plays. He could have had an interception. He blocked a kick. You know, he had a couple of plays in the run game that he strung out and did a really good job. But, you know, he got beat a couple of times. And, you know, that's going to happen as a corner. But really, we didn't really see that last year. We saw him get beat, but he wasn't. He thought he was. And
right.
So he held guys. So, you know, that's, but, you know, if they don't have Dunbar and then, you know, no Marquise Blair, no Bruce Irvin, I mean, this is starting to get, you know, Jordan Brooks. I mean, shoot, you almost can't afford to get any other injuries.
Well, one more before you jump in here, Jim, just an update from Pete on Jamal Adams.
Yeah, it was really bothering him after the game. He was really bummed out because he wants to play so badly, and you can imagine how important it is to him. But he, too, had a first-degree strain, so we'll see how that goes, and we'll just have to go day by day with that.
So day-to-day with Adams, and then one more talking about Jordan Brooks, who also suffered an injury, says Cody Barton will start if Brooks can't go.
Cody Barton is the next guy up, you know, for us if Jordan can't go. It's going to be for Jordan, you know, it's not a serious injury, but yet he's going to, we just have to wait and see if he has a chance to get back at the end of the week. If he doesn't, and while he's out, Cody will jump up.
So there you go. Jim, are you fearful of Trey Flowers out there? Or are you?
No, I'm not really fearful of Trey Flowers being out there, but I am just like you, Bob. When you hear the word ongoing sore knee with Dunbar, it makes you wonder. I was just sitting here thinking, well, okay, you've got Miami, you've got Minnesota, and you have a bye week. You could put him on IR for 3 weeks, and I don't want to hear about an ongoing knee problem with Dunbar later in the season. Maybe it's something they could just give him a rest for 3 weeks now, and maybe he'll be fine and good to go for Miami, but he's already missed one game, and so you just wonder about the next. Now, with Adams, you don't know about him, too. It sure sounds like he won't be playing at Miami, and they brought in Demarius Randall for a visit today, a safety, a 2015 first-round pick by Green Bay out of Arizona State, and so that leads you to believe that maybe the Adams injury is going to be a little longer than expected, too.
Well, and maybe Lano Hill's still not healthy. Maybe our guy Ryan Neal would get called back up from the practice squad. I mean,
let's hope so.
Who knows? I'm pulling for, I think, everybody that heard him yesterday. And again, if you didn't catch that interview with Ryan Neal, I would highly recommend it. He is infectious, that enthusiasm, and just fun to listen to. But check that out on the podcast page at 710sports.com if you didn't catch it. One other thing, Chris Carson. They've said it could be a week. Pete even said, he could play I mean, they're being very vague about it, but I'm seeing reports 1 to 2 weeks. Would you even risk it in this game? Because you do have the luxury of a veteran running back who ran for over 1,000 yards last year in Carlos Hyde, who's healthy. You've got a fourth-round pick in DJ Dallas who hasn't even been activated yet. And Travis Homer, obviously. You've got options. Do you even push it with Carson?
I wouldn't. I would definitely not. And that's the beauty of having Carlos Hyde in here. And again, you know, I just thought maybe he'd be a stopgap guy or, you know, some insurance. But, and also, you know, Travis Homer's starting to run better too. Mm-hmm. You know, he had in Atlanta, you know, there's a couple of plays. First of all, there was a play in Atlanta where it was like a sweep around the end. And for whatever reason, Atlanta knew it was coming because their two guys on their edge just turned and ran towards the sideline. It was one of the weirder things I've ever seen. I showed it to a couple of people. I was like, look at this, man. And I sent it to Moyer, and he's like, yeah, they obviously had some kind of a tip about the formation or whatever. But it didn't work out for him. And then, you know, we saw him on some of the kickoffs early on. Didn't look like him. But this last week, he looked like the Travis Homer that we became used to, that's really north-south guy. So anyway, you have him. They activated our guy DJ Dallas, who I was excited, but I didn't see him.
Was he active last week?
On the field, yeah.
Oh,
he was
okay.
Out there. And then, you know, so you have him, and then want to probably work him in slowly. I still think they favor Homer. But then, you know, like you said, you have Carlos Hyde. So, and he's very talented. And, yeah, I think you got to rest Carson. You know, it's too bad. I mean, that he took a flip play right before they threw the touchdown to Lockett, the deep crosser. And, you know, he just outran everybody to the edge. And the smart thing he did, and we talked to him about this last year, 2 years ago, he went out of bounds instead of taking a hit. And then Tristan Hill, that was just
cheap.
Just too bad that happened. But, yeah, you got to protect him.
Hey, Dave, a quick human nature question before we go to break. With DJ Dallas and Travis Homer, they played for the University of Miami. They're going to Miami. Do you think they'll get more up for this game than they would another one?
Oh, definitely, Jim. I would count on at least 100 yards from each of those young men.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, too.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. Coming up, the professor will join us. We'll get the very latest on the Titans situation with the COVID outbreak, what it means for upcoming games. You guys can text in any questions you've got for John Clayton, 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.